I confess that often I come before you having chosen readings from the Bible that are nice. They are often comforting. I use the lectionary, but too often do not bring to you the passages that are not so nice. But the Bible is a much better witness to the plight of humanity than that. And in our faith, witness can mean observer, but it also means testimony. And the plight of humanity is this, that every generation of humankind is affected and afflicted by violence and death. And the passages that call for comfort that we read are there because they are a response to the descriptions of violence and the lamentation that went before. And so I read for you today, Michael read, from the prophet of Amos. Amos, the shepherd poet, had slept on mountainsides and lived in the midst of storms and earthquakes. The baking heat of a god of extremes and glory and destruction. The god Amos knew was not a god of comfort, but a god of strength and of power, who was there in the midst of lightning and thunder. Amos, who had lived a life of hardship, came from his mountains to speak to the people who lived in comfort, the wealthy and the powerful of Jerusalem and of Israel. The people who lived to excess, who built grand palaces while the poor starved. The people who believed that the richness of their lives was due only to their own efforts. They believed that this sign of God's favor meant they had the right to indulge themselves, even at the cost of others. The great empire of Assyria had fallen, destroyed by its own excesses. The people of Israel called for the day of the Lord, when their enemies would fall before them, believing that there would be no fallout on them. And even while they rejoiced at the fall of their enemies, the people of Israel believed that they could do exactly the same things. Oppress the poor, damage the land, destroy the smaller communities, and that their wealth and their prosperity was assured, for they were the chosen people. Amos laments for his people, and he shouts out the warnings that destruction is coming. They are God's chosen people, and as God's people, they have more, not less, responsibility to live in ways that are righteous and just. Amos's God is not a God of comfort and easy living. This is the God who teaches in the midst of destruction. There is a book in the Bible that we call the Book of Amos, but fairly, Amos did not write a book. Amos wrote poetry. He shouted it in the gateway to the city. He shouted it in the streets. Short, pithy statements usually that could be remembered and repeated, like, "Justice shall roll down like a mighty river." His poems were remembered and written down, and when the darkness and the destruction did come, the kingdom of Israel was destroyed and people lost their sense of who they were as people of God, his words were remembered again. And the God of strength and power, the God in the midst of destruction, was remembered, and the words of lament became the songs of a people in exile. And when warfare and destruction came to Israel, they remembered Amos, and they taught the words of lament. When I watch the news and read the stories, I'm tempted to believe that the world is much worse than it was just a few years ago. Surely it's not that long ago we imagined a glorious future that was just around the corner. Surely a few years ago the intimations of war were far away from us anyway. Violence was not so near. The stories of oppression and rape were less heard. But a great theologian has recently said it is not that the world is more evil. It's that the evil is being revealed. If Harvey Weinstein is this week's news, it's worth remembering that the only thing new here is revelation. The day that we observe, this Remembrance Day, can never, ever be observed without politics. Just as Amos' prophecies were highly political in his day, the warnings about war and the call to justice were just as political then. Any call for peace, any remembrance of the causes of past conflict, any remembrance and call for justice, even the act of weeping for the lost, is not just emotional or religious, it's political. And it says something about the present situation that in preparing this sermon, I suddenly found myself using a thesaurus to look up synonyms for stupid. And then I found myself laughing. And that laughter found a way through for me. How is it that we will find a way through these present times? Is there a way that faith can teach us that goes beyond politics and beyond the absurd? Does Christian story have anything particular to offer here? I think so. Amos and the prophets remind us, first, this has happened before and it will happen again. The God we confess is not just a God for good times. God is and has always been a God for the terrible times. Not just the comforting God, but the God of thunder and lightning. Very, very frightening. The God who is still there in the midst of war. This is the God who inspires the calls for justice in the midst of stupid times. I did think about giving you a list of some of the words that I found most funny, but I didn't know if it was really helpful. This is the God that inspires the calls for truth in the times of lies, and the wisdom in the times of ignorance. And remembering that the way justice rolls down can break apart and wash away some of the structures that we take for granted. And yet, there is hope for humanity. The people survive. In holding fast to faith, we find strength to hold fast to virtues that create community in the midst of chaos. The heroes of these past conflicts are the ones who held fast to truth, like Dietrich Bonhoeffer, or who held on to kindness, like the people of the village of Chambon-sur-Lyon in France that is celebrated this year, who refused to give up the Jews who took shelter with them to the Nazis, at the risk of their own lives. The heroes, the teachers who reported abuses at residential schools, even though they lost their jobs and their livelihoods. The unexpected heroes who resist the calls to fear and set examples of kindness or call out in humor. As Christians, we know we are encountering people exhorting us to cruelty or dishonesty or anger against another faith group, and saying, it's because we're Christians. I was actually interrupted writing this sermon by someone who came to my door telling me I should participate in her scheme because we're both Christians. And here's what I realized, that I was so stunned by that request that I was completely unprepared with words to say that we're both polite and somehow loving, and at the same time expressed my true faith and my deep concern at what she was doing. And so that is the homework I have given to myself, to practice those conversations so that I'm ready to give reason for the hope that is in me. Not just to excuse myself from conversation, but to say politely, without using those synonyms for stupid, that my faith calls me to something else, to a hope in the midst of despair, to a hope that the world does over time get better, that God is still here, and that justice will roll down. And so I invite you this week to practice in your mind or with your friends those conversations so that we are not left silent when confronted by somebody who tries to use our faith in ways of which we disapprove or in ways that will hurt others or ways, quite frankly, that are just stupid. Thanks be to God for those who have more wisdom than I. Amen.